every day we see the physical manifestation of the digital revolution, the smartphones and the computers. But beneath all that, the real magic being worked consists of sums, algorithms, which make it all possible. John McCormack is the author of 9 Algorithms That Change the Future, the ingenious ideas that drive today's computers. And John is on the line. Good afternoon, John.
Hi, Sean.
Now, the first remarkable thing that's about your book is that you even attempted to write a book for a general popular audience that explains how these algorithms work. Did you have to put a lot of time and thought into how to explain to, you know, someone like me, and I'm completely innumerate, how these algorithms work?
Yes, I did put a lot of thought into it, but one of the really gratifying things about working on this book was, to my surprise, I found out that a lot of the important algorithms that affect us every day actually can be explained in everyday language, and that's exactly what I attempted to do in the book. It doesn't assume any knowledge of computer science or mathematics or anything like that.
Do each of these algorithms, were they developed by one person, or in some instances were they group efforts?
Oh, no. Many of them are group efforts, and certainly, I mean, I cover 9 different areas in the book, and these are wide-ranging things. There's a couple of the key algorithms from web search engines like Google are described in there. And obviously, you know, Google is not a one-person effort by any means. Mm. It's a vast organization that has pieced together things from many different sources.
Starting with the example of Google, it is remarkable that you can put in a question and out of the presumably billions of different sources of information and bits of information that it can pop up the most relevant ones in front of you. How does it do that?
Well, there's no short answer to that question, but one of the key ingredients, and in fact, the algorithm that many people believed helped launch Google to its premier place in the world of search engines, was an algorithm invented by the two founders of Google, who are Larry Page and Sergey Brin, back in the mid-1990s when they were both graduate students at Stanford University in California. They decided to start building a web search engine, and they came up with an algorithm today known as PageRank. And they actually published this algorithm. It's publicly known. It's been studied in detail by scientists all around the world for, 15 years now. But this is an algorithm that enabled their web search engine to pick out from what could be thousands or millions of hits from a particular query, to pick out the best few and display those at the top of a page. And that's what gave Google its famed relevance to your query, which makes them such an effective search engine.
And is this what you call in your book the random surfer trick?
Yes. So basically, the PageRank algorithm is based on a trick that I describe as the random surfer trick. And this metaphor comes from, imagine someone just sitting at a web browser, at a computer, looking at a web browser. They start on some web page, and they start looking at the links on that page. And imagine that you just selected one of those links at random and followed that to another page. And then again, you looked at that page, read the content, and then selected one of the links again, followed that link, and so on. After a while, you'd end up visiting some pages more than others, depending on which ones have more links to them. As I explain in the book, this model actually ends up being the key to the PageRank algorithm that was originally published by Larry Page and Sergey Brin and launched Google on its way. The reason is that it enables them somehow automatically to capture which pages are authoritative, which pages have something to say that other people believe because they've put links to that page themselves. This is one of the many elements now in the modern day Google search engine that enables them to give us good results.
Ah, right. So it's sort of the wisdom of crowds type logic behind it.
Indeed, yes. So as you know, this has become a sort of theme in computer science in the last few years, crowdsourcing and so on. And this is an early example of it. Exactly that, using web pages that were created by humans with links in them to infer what those humans think about the authoritativeness of other web pages.
And by the same token then, can people come up with an algorithm, if you develop a website, a brand new website, can somebody come up with an algorithm or a program that can knock you up that ranking by having lots of people, but by giving the original algorithm the impression that lots of people, place great store by your website?
Absolutely, and this is actually a mini industry of its own, known as search engine optimization. There are lots of companies out there, some of them more dodgy than others, that claim to be able to improve your search engine rankings on search engines such as Google and Bing. And yes, so what they try to do is exploit the known features of algorithms used by search engines in order to boost your ranking. And of course, this is a bit of an arms race because the web search companies themselves, Microsoft with its Bing search engine and Google with its engine and the many other ones as well, they don't want people to artificially be able to inflate their rankings beyond what their pages actually deserve. So this is an arms race that's been going on for some years now, and the big search engines have scientists constantly studying this problem and constantly trying to improve their algorithms to beat the search engine optimizers.
What's the 20 questions trick?
Ah, okay. Well, this is an interesting one from a completely different area of computer science known as pattern recognition. So one of the things we love to do these days is type out quick messages on our iPhones and smartphones, and they have these virtual keyboards that we often sort of hit the wrong key, and we don't really care because the machine quickly auto-corrects almost all the time to the word we actually wanted to type. So the question is, given some fuzzy information that may have mistakes in it, how can a computer correct it to what you actually intended? And another application which is similar is, say, recognizing faces in a picture. How can a computer, given some fuzzy information, which is a picture, infer from that the identity of a person, some hard information? And one of many methods for doing this is the thing I describe as the 20 questions trick. In scientific literature, it's described as a decision tree. And it basically says, let's find some questions we can ask about our data that are going to help to most quickly and efficiently give us the answer to the question. So in the case of what word did this user actually intend to type, given that they typed H-E-L-K-O. Well, I'm sure you can immediately guess they meant to type hello, but they missed one of the keys. But to automatically infer that using a computer, we need some methodology, and the 20 questions trick will start off saying, oh, did the user mean to type a word starting with H, yes or no? Did the user mean to have a double L in this word, yes or no, and so on. Somehow the computer can automatically come up with a list of 10 or 20 questions that will quickly isolate the answer to an otherwise difficult problem that may be easy for a human to solve but difficult for a computer.
Is that an area where perhaps maybe one might need some improvement? Because I'm sure lots of people listening have had that experience where, you know, the autocorrect on their phone drives them absolutely insane because it keeps suggesting words that they don't want to use.
Indeed. I mean, this is one of the most tricky areas of computer science. I mean, it's part of the wider field known as artificial intelligence, where, you know, we try to build computers and machines that can be, in some sense, intelligent, but we have to be very careful how we define that, of course. But the progress has been absolutely immense in the last two decades. I know that people do find it frustrating when computers mess up and, you know, you end up sending a text message with some gobbledygook in it. But, you know, if you think back even 5 to 10 years, the things that we can do automatically now are really staggering, and it's only going to get better.
Yeah, and I assume that people are working on improving these algorithms and coming up with new algorithms. Is there a holy grail of algorithms that people would like to crack?
Not really. There's no one thing that I would say is a holy grail. I mean, we were just talking about artificial intelligence, which is probably the most obvious area where there's such a long way to go. I mean, the gulf between what a human brain can do at a glance, at a photo, for instance, you can understand everything that's in that photo without even having knowing anything about where it was taken.
Is the problem there?
Do that yet.
Yeah, and is the problem there, John? Because as you were saying, that whatever the algorithm is, it boils down to yes/no questions, whereas the human brain doesn't work that way.
Not necessarily. I mean, here we're sort of rapidly getting into philosophical territory, and in fact, many computer scientists believe that at its core, the human brain does work this way with yes/no questions. I mean, your brain consists of neurons that fire signals, and although I'm simplifying a little bit, most of those neurons work by being either on or off at any one time. So although it's controversial, many people believe that if we had a big enough and complex enough computer, we could actually simulate a human brain.
Wow.
But, you know, we're a long way off from doing that successfully.
John, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was John McCormack there. He's the author of 9 Algorithms That Change the Future, the ingenious ideas that drive today's computers.